Sinn Féin and the DUP deadlocked on key issues, as you know. Political commentator Brian Rowan has been following all of this very closely. Brian's on the line. Barney, good morning.
Hiya, Frank. Good morning.
All good. All good here. You've been handed some information which gives an insight into these current discussions.
Well, I suppose these talks are now getting down into the finer detail, Frank, of these big issues, and a number of papers have been given to the parties on a confidential basis in the past number of days relating to legacy. And what that includes is a new draft bill to implement the Stormont House Agreement. So that's the finest of details, stretching out over 100 pages. Separate from the bill, some explanatory papers, a statement of principles on national security, a paper that deals with legacy inquests. But what we see in these documents, Frank, is the kind of government approach to, or what the government hopes will be the approach to trying to get this legacy issue across the line. And James Brokenshire, the Secretary of State, has been saying since he arrived here that at some point he wants to take this discussion out into a wider frame, go further than just the governments and the political parties. He talked about a public phase, a public engagement, and we see in this in some of these papers that the parties now have what he means by that. And I'll just read you a paragraph or two, Frank. One of these papers: the UK government's view is that the revised bill and the accompanying statement on national security could now be made available for a period of public engagement to allow victims and survivors to comment on the proposals before the legislation is introduced to the UK Parliament. Now, the framework they're trying to get in place, Frank, agreed at Stormont House, is for a new historical investigations unit, a commission for information retrieval or recovery, an archive into which everyone can place their story, and there is a reconciliation element to that as well. And we also see in one of these papers what the UK government hopes to do. And I'll just read you just another little paragraph. It says, the UK government's view is that the different parts of the legacy section of the Stormont House Agreement, the new legacy institutions, inquests, and services and support for victims and survivors should now be agreed and taken forward together as a package. So what they're trying to do, Frank, is get all of this over the line as a package, rather than breaking off individual bits of it, if you like, and trying to do those first. So the approach is to try to get it all over the line, if that is at all possible.
And national security wouldn't be a stumbling block in all of that?
Well, of course it will be, Frank, and that's the problem in all of this. I read an interview that James Brokenshire did with the Irish News political correspondent John Manley recently, in which he talked about Stormont House, the Stormont House Agreement, being the framework, if you like, and he said the devil is always in the detail of implementation. So national security is still, you know, a big standoff issue within this whole legacy debate. You know, what is meant by national security in terms of information being withheld from families? When is national security the reason for withholding information? When does it become the excuse? Does it become a cover-up or the hiding of information? So that is, in terms of the implementation detail, where you find some of the difficulty in all of this. And let's remember, Frank, that in this kind of three-week time frame that they're working on, legacy is just but one of the issues. There is a paper that I've managed to read, now given to the parties, only given to the parties 2 days ago, headed Statement of Principles and National Security Provisions in the Bill. And there is a heading within the document, Disclosure Safeguards. And I'll just read you a sentence or two of that just to explain to you what the argument is around national security from the government's perspective. So they say, making available to the HIU, that's the Historical Investigations Unit, all the information it needs for its investigations will mean that it has access to sensitive information, which, if published, could put the life and safety could put the life and safety of individuals or national security at risk. It then gives some of the assessments, you know, the terrorist-related assessments. The current assessment of the threat from Northern Ireland-related terrorism in Northern Ireland is severe. In Great Britain, it was raised to substantial in May 2016. The threat level for international terrorism in the UK is severe. And then there is a sentence that follows on. In this context, and consistent with its duties to keep people safe and secure, it is the responsibility of the government to put in place appropriate safeguards, both to ensure that the HIU is sufficiently secure to receive sensitive information and to prevent harmful onward disclosure of such information. And this issue about onward disclosure of information is the standoff issue within this kind of argument at the moment. What will the families not be told? What information will be withheld? Why is it being withheld? You know, in some cases, 40 years after events and incidents.
But just on that, Brian, when we think about national security and it being so long, in some cases four decades.
Yes, of course.
Who's at risk? Is it former leaders of Britain, former politicians, elderly old lords? Is it someone like that? Or is it the lives of individuals who were touts here in Mid-Ulster and Belfast?
I suppose when you talk about national security, it's about all of that covert methodology, covert intelligence. It's about agents. It's about all of that stuff, Frank. And this is part of the argument. Where does national security begin and end? You know, who decides in all of this? And you know, to go back to the point I made to you a moment ago, is it a reason for withholding information or is it an excuse? So that's part of the argument, Frank, within these talks, but not just within these talks. It's part of the argument that has played out over a period of years. You know, they've been trying to sort this legacy issue, get it across the line for over a decade, and here we are within a talks process, working within a tight 3-week time frame, trying to get all of this fine detail sorted. And you know, you and I have talked about this over the past number of days. Is 3 weeks enough time? It's not really enough time, and certainly not enough time if you want to do all of this properly and get, you know, implementation certainty and agreements that are going to stick this time and not have another fresh start that becomes a false start some weeks or some months down the line.
What will happen for the rest of this week, considering St Patrick's Day is at the end of it?
Well, they'll still be talking, but I think many people think that the crucial phase of these talks will be next week. The deadline of March 27th to try to get an executive in place. But we don't do deadlines very well, Frank. They are elastic. So I suppose there are a number of things to consider. Is this negotiation, if it is really about the certainty of implementation across a range of difficult issues, including legacy, it's difficult to see how all of that is going to be sorted within 3 weeks. But I suppose the judgment that has to be made is how much of it can be done, what is the significant difference on implementation after 3 weeks. Those are the judgments that will need to be made in terms of the value and potential of these talks. And there is always the ability to find a bit more time, if a bit more time will get the job done. But there are these other options in the frame, the possibility of a second election, the possibility of a phase of direct rule. So I think what we're doing at the moment, or what they're doing inside these talks, is getting down into the fine detail, trying to reach some compromises and agreements around implementation. And at the end of, not this week, but at the end of next week, Frank, I think it's when they're going to have to make the real judgments on the worth of these talks, what has been achieved and what has not been achieved.
And just very, very briefly, Brian, you think the will is there?
I think the will is there to restore devolution if this time it is different, that it is a partnership government that means partnership, and that there is implementation certainty on these issues that have proved impossible to deal with and sort over the past decade or so. So the will is there if the if there is that significant change in terms of what partnership government will mean and in terms of certainty around agreements that have been made.
Brian, thank you very much indeed. Brian Rowan, political commentator. This is the Frank Mitchell phone-in.